No, just don't worry about it.
Good afternoon. I'm going to time myself here so I don't go too long. So I am going to be presenting on our outcomes of this randomized controlled trial. This is the first time that I've had the opportunity and pleasure to do so, and I'm very excited to do it on this panel. So I have no disclosures to make. So we all know that physical activity is for everyone. Physical activity reduces risk for many diseases, including CHD, stroke, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and colon and breast cancer. And it also promotes healthy weight, cardiorespiratory and muscular fitness, mental health, and better sleep. Unfortunately, I think we all know that most Americans are inactive. And we have surveillance data based on self-report that says about a third to a half of Americans are meeting activity guidelines. But some recent studies have said that when we look at accelerometry data, which is when we put measurement objective measures on people, only about 5 to 10% of Americans are actually meeting current guidelines. So we have a serious national problem of physical inactivity. So this is a difficult health behavior for all to address. In 2008, there were key guidelines for adults with disabilities, well, for the entire nation, key guidelines were established for how much physical activity we should be getting. And around disability, it said that those who are able to should be doing 150 minutes per week of moderate aerobic activity or 75 minutes per week of vigorous intensity aerobic activity in at least 10-minute bouts over the week, or do an equivalent combination of moderate and vigorous intensity activity, as well as muscle strengthening activity 2 or more days of the week. And those who are unable to meet the guidelines should engage in regular physical activity according to their abilities and avoid inactivity. So nobody is off the hook, even with functional limitations. We have evidence that there are numerous barriers to activity, for everybody, but for people specifically with disabilities, there's a lack of available and affordable transportation, a lack of accessible exercise facilities and adaptive exercise, a lack of knowledgeable professionals, and lack of financial resources. So we devised a randomized controlled trial called Project Workout on Wheels that was aimed to increase physical activity in wheelchair users by helping the participants begin and maintain over 12 months a regular program of aerobic exercise and strength training. And very thankful to NCMRR for having funded this research. I had the pleasure to work with a fabulous team of people who were listed here. This grant, I was at the University of Kansas when this grant was awarded, and it was a bi-campus study between the Lawrence and Medical Center campuses, and we recruited from the Kansas City metro area. And Dot Neri, who is in the back of the audience, is one of the folks who was involved in the study and was funded as a doctoral trainee on the grant, and subsequently completed her degree and has now gotten her own funding for research. So our aims of the study were first to test the effectiveness of a multi-component behavioral intervention to promote physical activity, adoption, and maintenance among people with mobility impairments that required wheelchair use. But we were also interested to assess the physical and psychosocial effects of the intervention, and thirdly, assess the complex interplay of factors that would influence the effectiveness of the intervention. So, for the exercise approach, we wanted to have people exercise at home or in the community to try and eliminate the barrier of transportation. It's very expensive to transport people to and from. I was talking to David Gray, who was doing this in St. Louis, and they were spending around $10,000 a month. And I know that Dr. Rimmer, some time ago, had actually purchased an accessible van to provide that type of service. So we wanted to avoid the issues around transportation, really devise something that people could do wherever they were. And for those who had transportation, they could choose to go where they wanted. We encouraged them to incrementally increase their weekly physical activity over 6 months with the goal of doing moderate intensity aerobic activity, 20 to 30 minutes per day, 3 to 5 days a week, and strengthening activity 2 to 3 days per week. And we wanted to have people tailor their exercise program to their own individual needs and interests, and would reduce their transportation difficulties and be focused around what they had access to. And if they were doing the things that they wanted to do and not coming to our classes, we thought it would also enhance enjoyment and convenience of exercise. So this was a theory-based intervention. We used social cognitive theory and relapse prevention theory to underpin the components we selected. So we were really focused on trying to promote self-efficacy for exercise through some of our components, self-regulation and behavioral capability to focus on the environment and in making environmental changes, and then also preventing relapses to inactivity. So the methods of the study, we used a randomized stratified control trial, and we stratified participants into the two groups based on whether they had a support partner, which was going to be a feature of the intervention, and their disability type, so that we would assure that if somebody was, exacerbations would be equal, the potential for exacerbation would be equally distributed. And then we randomized into two groups, our comparison group, which we are calling a self-guided group, and our experimental group, which we provided staff support to promote exercise. The common components between the two groups were everybody got the same educational materials. We also had everyone self-monitor their exercise on a daily basis and return those logs to us weekly. We provided everybody attention via phone calls over 6 months, and we encouraged everyone to recruit family and friend support for exercise. And this is the guide that we had developed out of a previous project that we gave to everybody that targeted specific disability-related issues around promoting and adopting an exercise plan. So our comparison group, our self-guided group, we mailed them the materials and gave it to them. And we figured if it was that easy to get Americans to exercise, we wouldn't have a problem of inactivity in this nation. Had them monitor their exercise weekly. We provided the same frequency of phone calls to this group. And I don't think I have it on the slide. So we talked to everybody weekly for the first 2 months, bi-weekly, so we're fading our attention, bi-weekly over months 3 and 4, and then once a month for months 5 and 6. And during the phone calls for this group, we were asking them, thank you for your exercise log, or if they hadn't returned it, please send it in, and asked if they had any exercise-related injuries. And we were also encouraging them to get their family and friends involved in their exercise program, not necessarily to work out with them, but to provide comments. Positive comments about their exercise. The staff-supported group came to an educational workshop. Rather than mailing the materials and giving it that way, we brought them in for a 5-hour workshop where we had a woman who is herself has spinal cord injury, and she is a nurse practitioner at one of the model spinal cord injury centers in the nation out at Craig, and she's a phenomenal speaker. So she got everybody jazzed up and excited and addressed. She gave a lot of education information about types of exercise, what they can do, and then in the afternoon, it was a breakout to do individualized programming. And that programming, we were having them set goals, behavioral goals, what day, what time, what location, what type of exercise. They did relapse prevention during that, and they identified family and friends that would be supporting their exercise activities. We also gave them ongoing feedback and support for their exercise program by telephone. So we had three folks who were trained in some clinical disciplines, social work, psychology, who were making these phone calls and talking to them about different scripted topics, which I don't recall if I had time to include those scripted topics. I didn't in this presentation, but a variety of topics, making exercise fun, sticking with your goals, reaching your heart rate, that sort of thing. We also asked them to self-monitor their exercise weekly, and that is a technique that helps people attend to the behavior of interest and do more of it if that's what they're supposed to do, or less of it, like Weight Watchers would like you to do, if it's a negative behavior. And then we gave them relapse prevention training. So we think about when are there going to be times that you're not going to exercise and create a plan to get back on track. And we spent a lot of time at the workshop having them write this down, keep track, and create a plan that we would then talk to with them about during the phone calls over the scheduled contacts. And then we also decided we would like to provide them in writing monthly newsletters. So we developed a series of newsletters. Here's the topics that we talked about, and I've got a picture of a newsletter here. Here is one of the newsletters. It was just a single-sided, glossy document that would come in the mail, and we always highlighted a making behavior change topic on page one, and on page two we were always highlighting a real person with a disability about what their exercise program was, why they were doing it, the benefits they were getting, to really try and make it come to life. So people got that over the year in the study every month. So here's some of the topics we talked to them about: getting started in your exercise program, positive aspects of exercise, enlisting support, overcoming roadblocks, planning for success as they got into it over the year without us. So the outcomes that we measured, our primary outcome is physical activity, those weekly logs of exercise. And so those were based on self-report. We wanted to do an assessment to make sure that people were telling us the truth. So we also provided actigraph monitors to people on three occasions over the year, and they wore them for five consecutive days at 3 months, or 6 months, and 9 months. And then our secondary outcomes, we did fitness testing in an exercise lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center, and so we looked at their aerobic capacity and their changes in strength. And then we also had them complete surveys where we looked at exercise-related self-efficacy for exercise, exercise barriers, and disability-related changes around function and participation, fatigue, and health problems. The analyses that we did for AIM-1 to examine the intervention effectiveness around adoption and maintenance were mixed modeling to account for the interdependency among observations collected at multiple time points. Plus, we included covariates of health problems and season. This is happening in Kansas, so it can be really hot in the summer and really cold in the winter. And then we estimated the intervention effects in group differences, by group differences and over time. And then for AIM-2, assessing the psychosocial intervention, physical and psychosocial intervention effects, we did the same mixed modeling approaches. And then looking at factors that influence the effectiveness, we did the best subset mixed modeling to find the best set of variables in predicting the self-reported aerobic exercise. So in the interest of time, I sort of cut out some things, but people had to contact us. We distributed information across the entire metro area to have people learn about the study, and they contacted us. So only those interested to start an exercise program contacted us. We ended up enrolling 128 eligible individuals who were screened. A paper on our recruitment efforts was published this year in Contemporary Clinical Trials, and you can check that out. On average, the participants were about 44 and a half years old. They are long-term wheelchair users, about 22 years with disability, about half women, half men. They were mostly white, with some black and other racial groups. We see a wide variety of disability types, a lot of spinal cord injuries, cerebral palsy, spina bifida, MS, fibromyalgia, amputation, stroke, and TBI. So a lot of different types of etiology of mobility impairment. We did have an attrition rate of 33% over the year, which unfortunately was greater than we had anticipated. But we did, it's an intent to treat analyses, and the way we handled missing data was using a maximum likelihood estimation algorithm for incomplete data, and we had no evidence of patterns for missing data, so we used MR and MCAR assumptions. So here's the major outcome for AIM-1. The orange line is the average minutes spent in aerobic exercise for our staff-supported group who got the support by phone. And the yellow line is for the comparison group who had it mailed and they were self-guided. Overall, for the year, we saw significant differences between groups. But that difference was only about 16 minutes different per week. So, When we looked at the adoption, it was the p-value was small but not significant. So these are meaningful differences between the groups. So when controlling for the health events and season, it was not significant. But for maintenance, the difference was significant over time. So needless to say, the average amount of time people were doing exercise fell far below what the current recommendations are. But I will say one of the inclusion criteria, people had to be less, you know, fairly inactive. And this group was very inactive that we enrolled. When we looked at what they were doing for exercise, the majority of people were doing arm cranking. I should say the majority of exercise bouts was for arm cranking. One of the things that we recommended, a few people actually had an arm crank ergometer or went to a fitness facility who had one, but many people bought pedal exercisers, which you can get fairly cheaply. They're actually meant for your leg, but you can be set on a table. But a lot of folks were wheeling and walking and doing seated aerobics that we used Dr. Rimmer's recommended that DVD from NICPAD. We did see significant effects over time on strength, but no significant difference by group. I want to point out that we gave everybody, regardless of group assignment, TheraBands and instructions on how to use the TheraBands. They got paperwork on that, but they got to test it out. They were shown how to do it when they came in for their fitness testing. And the type of exercise that predominantly did was TheraBands because they had them. And then some were doing hand weights, and then you can see a variety of low-frequency other activities. We had no significant effect on peak VO2 by group or by time, which I think is probably indicative of the low level of aerobic exercise that we saw happening. And then, unfortunately, we also saw no significant effects in psychosocial outcomes, except for two interesting ones. Negative mood increased over time, but I want to point out, I didn't put the numbers up here, the positive mood average over the year was about a 4.0 on a 0 to 7 scale, and the negative mood was a 2.3, so it increased only to 2.3 on that 7-point scale. So people were still less negative than they were positive. They definitely had more positive experiences. But I think that may be a reflection of they were filling out a survey for an exercise study during which they didn't do as much exercise as they wanted. So I think that was probably reflective of that. And the other thing that we saw significant over time was self-efficacy decreased over time, which makes sense. I think people, when they filled it out at the beginning, were really optimistic and motivated and thought they could exercise under all sorts of conditions. And then guess what? Life happens over a year, and they realize this is much more difficult than they had expected. But we did see some, we looked at predictors of exercise, we looked at does disability type, health problem, exercise self-efficacy, time with disability, fatigue, and exercise barrier predict whether people are going to do more aerobic exercise. And we did see some significant effects, and it was different for each group. The staff-supported group, where we gave them support, higher self-efficacy indicated higher aerobic exercise. But for the group basically doing it on their own, the greater less exercise barriers meant more exercise. I just want to point out that with the actigraph monitoring, you tend to look at some reliability and fidelity. Of course, when you don't see the results that you hope after lots of intensive intervention, what it felt like to us as we were delivering it, we had actigraph monitoring over 1,000 days in the study. And we saw the reliability between people's self-report and the ejected counts was at 0.48, which was significant. So it was a moderate level, which is actually very, you know, good for actigraph monitoring. But when we look at the specific components of the intervention, the workshop was only for the group getting staff support. And we had some folks who didn't come. For those folks, we gave them a DVD. Our consultant came in and did a DVD and walked through it. But she's a very dynamic, interactive person. So I think there was a lot of decrement in content if you didn't come. Plus, we noted there was a tremendous amount of sharing of information across people. They wanted to get together again. So I think if you didn't come to the workshop, you missed out on a lot in terms of that group interaction. Not everybody set goals. Only a three-quarters of the folks actually wrote down their relapse prevention strategy. A lot of people said, I need to think about this, and despite even trying to prompt to get it back, they never filled those out. When we look at how many calls we completed, there's not a significant difference between the groups. So we completed about two-thirds of the calls that were planned, and it was about 15 calls over the six-month period. But we did see a significant difference between groups. And I want to point out, group one only had one content-related call. All the other calls were just, we were checking in, thanks for your log, do you have any exercise injuries? The other group had 15 scheduled topics. So we had a lot more content to go through. So that group, but neither group had 100% content delivered. And so we saw just over two-thirds of the staff-supported group actually receiving the content that we had intended. So in conclusion, our home-based telephone-delivered intervention yielded some success promoting exercise adoption and maintenance for wheelchair users who received the staff-supported intervention. But the effect was below what we expected. Participants engaged in substantially less aerobic exercise than what the American Heart Association and American College of Sports Medicine recommends. They were only doing about a third of the 150 minutes of exercise per week. So the findings suggest that wheelchair users really need substantially greater support to achieve guidelines for activity. And so that's what we've actually beginning to think about, what type of support is going to be needed. And we've come up with some ideas. One of the things we saw is a lot of health problems, and that took people off of their game. Some people were serious health problems, they were hospitalized for extensive periods of time that were related to their disability, needing surgeries and that sort of thing. And others were just colds, flus, you know, the seasonal illnesses. But still, if you got a flu for a week, you might be out for a week or two. And getting back on track after that period was difficult. And if they missed that phone call, We stopped phone calls at the six-month period, and so that I think that we need to think about how are we going to deliver intervention for this group. They also had a long wait time because it was a study, and our recruitment was so intensive. They waited on average between when they contacted us till they got started, just over 2 months. When people are ready to start an exercise program, they're ready to start now, so we've got to figure out ways to get them plugged in right away and not wait for that workshop. So we're thinking about how can we do this and deliver it to them as soon as we get them cleared by their physician. A lot of people had difficulty accessing exercise equipment in a timely manner. I think it would be fabulous if we could give people some inexpensive options, give them Dr. Rimmer's DVD, give them a pedal exerciser. We could spend less than $100 to get them started with some things in their own home to get them capitalizing on that readiness for change. And finally, people who came to the workshop, they all wanted greater connection with others. And I think we should look to what's done in the general population around health behavior change and around diet and physical activity and find ways to connect them. And I've been thinking about web-based meetings. Since transportation is a difficult problem, Skype is free. So it would be great if we can start to have moderated sessions via the internet. And so I'm going to explore that in some pilot studies. Thank you.